The best way to learn a language? Immersion. Living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way. And that's with Babbel. Be a better you in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors or waste hours on apps that don't really help you speak the language. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts and help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversations, and their tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription at babbel.com/bluewire. That's 60% off at babbel.com/bluewire, spelled BABBEL.com/bluewire. Rules and restrictions apply.
You don't want it. You don't need it. But you're going to get it anyway. The Kevin Sheehan Show. Here's Kevin.
Washington with a trek out to Seattle, Sunday 4:25 kickoff in one of the toughest venues in the NFL, Seattle's Lumen Field, where rain is in the forecast for the entire day with temperatures in the low 50s. Of course, rain is in the forecast for the Pacific Northwest. This show's presenting sponsor is Window Nation. If you've got older windows, 10 years of age or older, you should get new windows. Call them at 866-90-NATION or go to windownation.com. Mention my name. Tell them I told you to call them. They'll take good care of you. You'll get a free estimate, so you've got nothing to lose. 866-90-NATION or windownation.com. Sunday's game in Seattle is a game that, if Washington wins it, will change the conversation about our team around the league. That's not exaggeration. That's not hype. If they beat the Seahawks Sunday on the road to get to 5-5, especially if victory comes with another big day for Sam Howell and the offense, if that happens, Washington's going to be on everybody's radar. Everybody's going to be talking about them come Monday as a team that can make a run to the NFC playoffs. My preview and pick of this game coming up in this opening segment. Jay Gruden will join me after that for his weekly hit on this Friday podcast. And then 11 picks for the smell test in the final segment of the show. More NFL picks than college picks this week for those of you that are convinced I do much better on pro football than I do college football. I will talk some Maryland-Nebraska in the final segment as well. A huge game for both teams as Mike Locksley is looking for a third straight bowl eligibility year, and Matt Rhule in his first year in Lincoln trying to get his first Husker team to a bowl game as well. This could be the last legitimate chance for a win for both teams this year. Maryland's got Michigan next week, and then they close at Rutgers, and Rutgers is good under Greg Schiano this year, or let me just say much improved. Locksley on the ropes a little bit. No job security conversations with Mike Locksley, please. But the Terps need a win tomorrow in Lincoln. Good college football Saturday, highlighted by Michigan at Penn State. As the recording of this podcast is taking place, no news on whether or not Michigan's going to be punished for the sign-stealing drama that's been going on. Washington and Seattle on Sunday. I am looking forward, to the game on Sunday. And I'm also looking forward to the changes that'll be coming at the end of the year. All right, You know, I think Josh Harris is already well on his way to putting together a list of general manager candidates that he wants to interview, perhaps even a short list of potential new head coaches that he wants or is hoping that his new GM will want to interview. So the offseason coming up is going to be an interesting one. We all understand that. It'll be fun to know that the next group is not going to be Dan Snyder picking, you know, coaches, etc. I am looking forward to that. But that's a few months away, and we're still in the midst of a regular season that still has 8 games left, nearly half the season for Washington. And their last 2 games have, for me right now, subject to change, of course, but for me right now, the last 2 games have given me reason to be optimistic about what we're going to see the rest of the year. Now, this is Washington. It never seems to go well, especially once you think it might. But for now, anyway, I think they are an upset win on Sunday in Seattle away from changing the whole vibe of this season. If they are to pull it off with another strong performance by Sam Howell in the offense at 5-5 with the Giants on deck, the outlook on this season will be different. I think it'll be different for a lot of you who don't think they have any chance of beating Seattle and might admit, hey, okay, if they beat Seattle, we can have a conversation about the rest of the season on Monday. I think they have a chance to beat Seattle, and maybe that's why I'm having this conversation right now. But I do know that if they do pull it off, the outlook on this season will be completely different, even though some of you will say that it's just delaying the inevitable. That even if they play well on Sunday, win and win some more games and get on a little bit of a mini roll, you're convinced they'll blow the 1 or 2 that matter the most at the end of the year. I'm not going to disagree with that. I understand that lack of expectation or that expectation that they would blow it even if they put themselves in position to do something. I'm just telling you that if they win on Sunday and Sam plays well, he and the team are going to become a trendy pick to go to the playoffs. And while I'm not going to be the guy, I promise, talking about getting to the playoffs and then having a chance to do something when they get there, I will be talking about a team that is going to play some important playoff stakes games down the stretch. And that will be a good thing for Sam Howell to play in those kinds of games down the stretch versus, you know, the kinds of games that we thought they would be playing when they lost to the Giants a few weeks ago. If they lose, there's still going to be some opportunities, you know, coming up, assuming that they beat the Giants next week. That could be the closest to a should-win game they've had in years. The Giants right now at my bookie are 17-point underdogs to Dallas. I think that's the biggest point spread of the season so far. They don't have a quarterback. They don't have a quarterback capable of playing well enough to keep a game close against anybody. You know, Washington, win or lose Sunday against Seattle, will be at least a touchdown favorite. Maybe, if they win Sunday, as high as a double-digit favorite against the team that just beat them a few weeks ago, 14-7. It's because of the quarterback. No Daniel Jones, no Tyrod Taylor. They'll have this guy, DeVito. I looked this up because I was curious about this. Again, I don't think they'll be a double-digit favorite if they lose to Seattle or if they don't play well against Seattle. But if they were to beat Seattle, don't be surprised if Washington's a 9, 9.5, 10-point favorite next week. Dallas is a 17-point favorite, and it seems to be climbing. But I looked this up before I started to record the podcast today. It's been over 6 years since Washington was favored by double digits. 6 years. That's a long run without just one flukish game where they're playing kind of well and they're playing a terrible opponent. They were a 12-point favorite on October 15th, 2017, against the San Francisco 49ers in Kyle Shanahan's first year as head coach of the Niners. By the way, the Skins won that game 26-24. They were up 17-0 and then nearly blew the big lead. They won the game, but they didn't come close to covering. But that was the last time they were a double-digit favorite over anybody. That's an amazingly long run of not being in a game where you're expected to win the game easily for almost any NFL team. As someone who bets, I can tell you why they haven't been a big favorite over anybody for a long period of time. It's not just because they've been, you know, a bad team or a mediocre team for much of the time over the last six seasons. It's because they've been so mediocre to awful on offense. Teams that can score will at least have a game or two over a few-year period where they're playing an awful opponent and odds makers will make them a significant favorite, you know, a 10 or more point favorite. But Washington hasn't been able to score consistently since the 2017 season. This year is the best year scoring-wise. They're averaging 21.2 points per game, and they are 18th currently in points per game in the league. Last year, they were 24th in the league. The year before that, they were 24th in the league. They averaged 18.9 points per game last year, 19.7 in 2021. They were 25th in the league in 2020. They were dead last, 32nd in the league in scoring in 2019. And in 2018, they were 29th in the league in scoring. That's why they haven't been a double-digit favorite since 2017. Because they've played some teams that have been pretty bad. And in those games, they've only been, you know, 6.5, 7, 7.5, 8 point favorites. In 2017, they were the 16th highest scoring team in the league. In 2016, they were 12th. And in 2015, they were 10th. So during that stretch, they were a double digit favorite every once in a while. But if they were to play well offensively in Seattle Sunday, and then win the game, I think they could be a 9-10 point favorite at least against the Giants. If they don't play well offensively and it's like a regression game back to what we saw at times during the first seven, they're still going to be a 7 point favorite over the Giants. The Giants are awful right now. That's next week. Seattle first. I think they can win the game. I really do. I am optimistic. I've been off this year for the most part. I guess last week I got it right. I think the Philadelphia game, maybe final score-wise, I was close. I think I was in terms of thinking that it would be a close game. But I remember the last time this year that I was somewhat intrigued or, you know, excited about a game. It was the Buffalo game, and I predicted them to win, and they did not. They lost 37-3. I am excited about this game. I think that Seattle is a beatable team. It would also be the best team that they've beaten. As I've mentioned a couple of times this week, they're 10-25. The teams that they've beaten, excuse me, are 10-25. They haven't beaten a good team yet. But I think that the last 2 weeks have kind of changed my view for now. Subject to change, of course, as always. But I think they've got a chance to pull off an upset Sunday in Seattle against 5-3, a 5-3 team coming off a horrendous loss to Baltimore last week, 37-3. All right, here are my keys to a win over Seattle on Sunday. Washington beats the Seahawks if, all right, number one, do the same thing offensively you've done for the last 2 weeks. That's the way this team needs to play offensive football if they are going to be a heavy pass over run ratio team. And I don't think that that's going to change. I don't think all of a sudden they're going to become a run first team or a balanced team. But if you're intent on throwing the ball a lot more than running it, and I don't have a problem with that, you can't revert to what wasn't working for the first seven games at times, which was the pure dropback stuff. You've got to stick with what's worked. Quick game, three-step drops, screens, traditional and bubble, dashes, sprint outs, moving the pocket, getting Sam into rhythm, getting him confident, getting the ball quickly into the hands of your playmakers, and keeping a defense off balance. They've done a great job the last 2 weeks. Seattle's a little bit different than New England and a little bit different than Philadelphia, so it won't be exactly the same. Seattle's strength is in their back end. But this is the kind of offense, if they're going to be heavy pass over run, this is the way they need to throw the football for now. It doesn't exclude dropbacks. They had plenty of those last week, but it came after the established quick game and getting it out in a hurry. You're going to minimize the number of times he gets hit. You're going to minimize the number of times he gets sacked. And you're going to maximize the number of times a ball leaves his right hand and lands in the arms of one of your playmakers. I'm looking forward to hopefully seeing a third consecutive week of that. There's been a lot of discussion about how bad Seattle's run defense is, and will this be the week that they really lean on the run a little bit more? Look, last week they got 24 rushes out of Gibson and Robinson Jr., but it's because they moved the chains. You know, they moved the chains by using their quick game to gain yards, to stay on the field, to convert on third down, to make first downs on first and second down as well. But 55% on third down gives you a lot of opportunities, you know, each week. They've run 21 more offensive plays than their opponents the last 2 weeks. I think this is a big part of it. As far as, you know, whether or not they'll run it more this week because Seattle's rush defense has been weak here recently, I'm not buying that Seattle's rush defense is as bad as it's been made out to be. They added Leonard Williams, you know, at the trade deadline, so we'll see him for the second time in a month. He was with the Giants when the Giants beat Washington 14-7. Baltimore runs it on everybody. Okay, they had 300 yards against Seattle last week. They faced Arizona. Arizona's average yards per carry was okay. They faced the Browns the week before Baltimore. The Cleveland rushed it for 155 yards, but it was 3.8 yards per carry. They had a great rush defense against Cincinnati. I'm not buying that their rush defense is so awful that Washington should be able to go on the road and take the crowd out of it by running and being more balanced this week than they have been at any time this year. I don't think that's in Eric Bieniemy's mindset. I like the run extension plays. I think that's essentially what he's been able to say to Ron, who I do think has been pushing since the Buffalo game to decrease the number of pure dropbacks so that the sack numbers would come down. I think Eric was stubborn there for a few weeks, but ultimately we've gotten two really good game plans, two well-called games, given his talent, given the teams that he's faced. And I think Ron's okay with, you know, the pass-to-run ratio as long as some of those throws are quick ones and act kind of as run extension plays. So number one, Washington beats Seattle if they continue to do what they've been doing offensively in the pass game. Number two, they've got to eliminate big plays on defense. It's been the explosive plays all year long that have killed this defense and made it a very disappointing year through nine games. The chunk plays, last week another one. Now they did a pretty good job defensively last week, with the exception of the 64-yard run by Stevenson. Those are the plays that have hurt. Big runs, big throws. You know, even the Giant game where the defense held the Giants to 14 points and you know, did a pretty good job for most of the day, it was the chunk plays. It was the long one to the rookie wide receiver from Tennessee. It was a couple of decent-sized Barkley runs. You've got to minimize the explosives, the big offensive plays. And this week, this is a team that lives off of the big play with DK Metcalf, with Lockett, with Smith Najigba, with Kenneth Walker III, with Zach Charbonnet out of the backfield. Like, they rely on the big play. Geno can make the big play. He's also hurt them, you know, by turning it over a little bit. He's got, you know, 9 touchdowns, 7 picks. He's had a lot of turnover-worthy plays. I think one of the keys to a win over Seattle is force Geno Smith and this Seattle offense to go 12, 13, 14 plays without making a mistake. You know, don't play as much man coverage as they have. Washington's played more man coverage this year than they did last year. Where's the zone matching? Where's more of the zone? Forbes was more of a zone, eyes on quarterback corner to begin with. So I'd like to see a defensive game plan that is more bend, don't break. You know, don't give up the big play. Can Geno Smith consistently go 13, 14 plays and not make a mistake? I don't think so. Next up and lastly on the list of Washington beat Seattle if keys is the cliched don't self-destruct. But it's more important this week. When you play in a venue like the one they're playing in on Sunday, it is easy to self-destruct. You know, when you play in Seattle, when you play in Kansas City at Arrowhead, you play in Buffalo, you play in New Orleans, it is really hard to play a clean game. You've got to be buttoned up, especially on offense. You can't have third and threes turn into third and eights because of false starts. So whatever, you know, the signals are, the silent counts are, you got to be buttoned up offensively. And then you can't obviously turn the ball over. They got away last week with losing the turnover battle but winning the game, but that's because that was New England. You can't hand the game to them. And, you know, self-destruction in these venues, just you see it all the time with road teams. And so they've got to be ready to play a clean football game. And I'll just add one thing to this last key. The crew calling the game Sunday, the referee crew, is the Alex Kemp crew. They are number one in average flags thrown per game and number one in average flags thrown against the road team per game. You got to be sharp. The flags are going to be flying if they are consistent with what they've been over the first 9 weeks of the season. The Alex Kemp crew, number one in flags thrown per game, average flags thrown per game, number one in average flags thrown against the road team per game. Washington's going to have to play a pretty clean game Sunday to have a chance. With that said, I like them Sunday. I know I've been wrong in the upset picks this year. Buffalo being the one where I thought they'd win and they lost by 34. I just think this is a winnable game Sunday, and I'm definitely influenced by the last 2 weeks and the last 2 weeks offensively. I've got Washington winning a high-scoring 30-24 game in overtime. They win the toss, they take the ball, they drive it down the field, and Sam Howell is once again viewed as a guy that can do it with his third consecutive outstanding game and his second outstanding game in a win. 30-24 in overtime. Kiss of death, I know. All right, a couple of quick things and then we'll get to Jay Gruden, including something I want to play for you that I found. The first thing is this. Montez Sweat last night, 8 pressures for the Bears. The most in a game for a Chicago Bear pass rusher since Robert Quinn in 2020. He did not have a sack, but 8 pressures, the most for a Chicago Bear pass rusher in 3 years. Good for Montez. I'm rooting for him. Looked odd in that Chicago uniform, especially given that it was the orange alternate uniforms that the Bears were winning last night in what was a hideous Thursday night game. Chicago won it 16-13. It actually helps them because they have Carolina's number one pick in the draft next year. Sunday, Chase Young makes his debut for the 49ers in, I think, the biggest game of the day. It feels like a huge spot for the Niners with 3 losses in a row. Feels like almost, not a must win, obviously, but if they lose that game to Jacksonville, who is rolling at 6-2, and Seattle wins, Seattle's in first place in the NFC West. Looking forward to watching football all day long before Washington kicks off at 4:25. Cleveland-Baltimore, another really good game. In the 4 o'clock window, in addition to Washington-Seattle, which is a good game, Detroit-San Diego, Detroit-LA, Chargers. That's a big game for the Chargers to kind of get above 500 and be legitimately in the wild card race. Man, they should be. That team, I think, is better than the results. You know, I don't know what it is, but maybe they got something going against the Jets, although they certainly didn't get anything going offensively against the Jets on Monday night. All right, before we get to Jay, I wanted to mention this, and I want to play something for you. So Washington and Seattle, despite Seattle being in the AFC for half of its existence, roughly, they have quite the history. You know, they've played 22 times. Washington, 13-6 in the regular season. They've played three times in the postseason. Washington's most common opponent in the playoffs since the merger in 1970. They've played the 49ers four times, the Vikings four times. And then there are four teams they've played three times: Detroit, Chicago, Tampa, and Seattle. Of course, the last time they played Seattle in the playoffs was following the 2012 season. That is one of the more infamous games in Washington history. Robert Griffin III going down in a heap on a rough turf, to say the least, in a 24-14 loss. They were up 14-0 in that game. In 2007, or following the 2007 season, they played in the wild card round as well at Seattle. They took a 14-13 lead in the fourth quarter and then gave up 22 consecutive unanswered, and they lost 35-14. Of course, that was the season following the Sean Taylor tragic death, where they got on a roll. They ended up in the postseason against Seattle. But the first time they played the Seahawks in the postseason was following the 2005 season. And that was, you could argue, as close to an NFC championship game as they were during the Snyder era. I hate to call the Tampa divisional playoff loss 14-13 following the 99 season as a Snyder era playoff loss, because he took over the team before he could ruin it that season. But when they went to Seattle following a playoff win over Tampa in the wild card round, they were up 3-0 with a chance to take a 10-0 lead. And this play, which many fans, including yours truly, have referenced, it was an opportunity to go up 10-0 on a Carlos Rogers ball that was right in his hands for a pick six, and he dropped it. Here's Dick Stockton and Moose Johnston on the call for Fox on that day in January 2006.
Hasselbeck looking for a receiver, and it's tipped away and almost picked off by Carlos Rogers. Maurice Morris flaring from the backfield, and very nearly a pick and a score by the rookie Carlos Rogers.
What a great play right there. Matt Hasselbeck holds this a little bit too long. The speed of the secondary players in the NFL, too good to make a throw like that. You've waited on it too long. Very fortunate that he didn't have that one going back to the house.
Carlos Rogers, he had some vision issues, remember? Got better when he got to the 49ers and they corrected his vision, and all of a sudden he started making interceptions. But that ball was right in his hands for a 10-0 second quarter lead. And Washington was playing great on defense. And Sean Alexander had already been knocked out of the game by LeVar Arrington. They had a chance with that play to go up 10-0 and potentially get to what would have been an NFC championship game in Carolina, Washington against the Panthers. No, that was not the Ron Rivera Panthers. Last time Washington was in Seattle, it was that game in which none of the offensive line was available to play, and Jay Gruden basically had to introduce the players in the locker room to one another because there were so many new players in the locker room for that game, especially on the offensive line. And they had, you know, that incredible ending down 14-10 where they went 90-some yards in a few plays, or 80-some yards in a few plays, and won the game. You'll hear that at the very end of the show. All right, Jay Gruden next, right after these words from a few of our sponsors.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
This segment of the show with Jay Gruden is brought to you by my friends at Surfside. Guys, if you're hunkering down to watch football this weekend and you're looking for a food answer for Penn State, Michigan at noon tomorrow or all of the games Sunday, we get a 1 o'clock window where we're not solely focused on Washington, so we get to watch Baltimore, Cleveland, San Francisco at Jacksonville before Washington kicks off at Seattle at 4:25. I've got the food answer for you. Go to SurfsideDC.com and order one of Surfside's fajita boxes. Their fajita chicken, fajita steak, fajita veggies, so good. I did this a few weeks ago. The chicken, the steak, so tender, so flavorful. And it's all in a convenient grab-and-go box. You can order online at SurfsideDC.com. You can pick it up. You can have it delivered straight to your door. This is for a small gathering, a medium gathering, or a large gathering. The food is great. The fajitas are incredible. And this is a great answer for just this time of year when you've got, you know, gatherings at your house, holiday time. These fajita boxes make dinner so easy. You know, you can pick it up on your way home. You can, again, order for delivery. SurfsideDC.com's got your food answer for this time of year and certainly for a football weekend with their fajita boxes. Again, learn more at SurfsideDC.com. Jay Gruden is with me every Friday during football season, and he jumps on right now. We'll talk about Washington and Sam Howell and their matchup with Seattle here in a moment. I wanted to start by going back to Sunday and a coach who coached for you, Kevin O'Connell, who's the head coach of the Minnesota Vikings, and what he was able to pull off on Sunday with Joshua Dobbs, who came in, you know, after the trade deadline midway through the week and apparently knew nothing of the playbook, had to come in after the first drive of the game when their quarterback, who would replace Kirk Cousins, was concussed. And the word is that he essentially walked through with Josh Dobbs over the final, you know, 54 minutes of that game, each play as he called it. Like he basically instructed him what to do on every play, and somehow they pulled off, you know, an incredible win at Atlanta. He coached for you. Tell me what you think happened Sunday in Atlanta.
Well, Josh Dobbs had about 3 days to learn some plays. So Josh is one of the smartest human beings on earth. So he can handle it. He's been in seven different systems already. It's just a matter of the terminology is what's different for Josh. You know, some people call Aggie, all go, whatever it might be, but the plays are pretty similar. Just about the terminology, and if anybody can handle it, Josh can handle it. But in the course of a game, you give your backup quarterback, like we had to do with Sanchez, and we had to do with Josh Johnson when he got here in a short time notice. You have to give him like a package of about 20 to 25 plays they got to learn. And situationally, third down and short, third down long, short yardage, goal line, whatever it might be, red zone, and they have to learn a package of plays, and then you might have to talk them through a couple of them just to remind them what this is and who's going where and the motion and calling the play. So, yeah, it's difficult, but Josh is, like I said, very intelligent guy and can handle it.
you know, you mentioned Mark Sanchez. So there was a story told this week. I'm going to ask you if it's true. The night that you guys played Philadelphia in 2018, which was 2 weeks after Alex got hurt, and that night, remember, Colt McCoy got hurt, you put Mark Sanchez into the game on a very limited playbook. The story that was told this week, I heard it on XM Sirius, was that you turned over the headset or you got Kevin O'Connell involved because O'Connell explained the plays to Sanchez as if they were the plays that were sort of similar to the playbook they had both shared together in 2009 with the Jets. Is that true?
Yes. As soon as Colt McCoy got hurt, I took the headphones off and gave them to Kevin for a couple of reasons. One, because he had been working with him on an individual basis, trying to get him caught up to a level of functionality where he could go into a game and play. So they were communicating closely, so I let him call the plays. And the first play he called was a duo and went 90 yards for touchdown. I said, damn, Kevin, you're pretty good at this.
Yeah, Adrian Peterson. Right.
Yeah.
The rest of the night did not go so well. It didn't go as well as it did for Dobbs on Sunday. But it was a better opponent.
No, yeah, you're exactly right. But, you know, the big thing is when you have a quarterback like that, athletic ability is really important because Josh Dobbs made some plays with his legs that, you know, I mean, you just can't coach, which is critical in third down situations. And for some reason, Atlanta Falcons decided to play two-man on 4th and 7 against Josh Dobbs, who can run, which I just still can't understand that one. But anyway, because Atlanta was my survivor pick, that's why I'm so
stoked. Oh, really? Yeah.
Call it two-man. Yeah.
Well, you won your lock of the week on this show. You had Cincinnati on Sunday night. So you are now, I think you're 5-2 so far with your locks
of
the week.
What do you guys want from me? What do you want from me?
I know. It's really good. You mentioned Josh Dobbs. Josh Johnson was incredibly bright, too, right? I mean, that was one of the reasons you signed him.
Yes. Josh Johnson is very bright. I had him at Cincinnati, which was a good thing. So he kind of, some of the plays kind of carried over, and he had a little bit, he remembered a little bit of those plays, so it was easy for him to come in and function too. And he could run.
I've always wondered about some of these quarterbacks that hang around forever. You know, Chase Daniel, Josh Johnson, Josh Dobbs, you know, Jacoby Brissett, you know, guys that have never been regular starters, but everybody seems to want them in their quarterback room, in their locker room, as a backup in case of, you know, break glass emergency. What is it about these kinds of guys that allows them to stick around for a long career, never be a regular starter, make a lot of money, by the way? I mean, Chase Daniel's an all-timer. I think he made $50 million or something like that in the NFL and played in like 3 or 4 games total. But what is it about those guys that gives them a chance to stick forever?
Well, first thing you want your backup to do is he's got to be able to function if something happens. That's number one. He's got to be good. And those guys are all pretty good quarterbacks. Number two, they have to support the starter. And they got to make sure that, you know, there's no drama, there's no controversy, that this is a starter, we're going to support him. But I'm going to get myself ready to play if need be. And if need be, I'm going to be able to function. And all those guys can do that. Certain teams want certain types of backups that are similar to the skill set that they have as a starter. Some people want skill set that is totally different because it gives a defense a different look. So it's a matter of who you want and what you want. But the most important thing is, can they function when they get in there? And number two, will they support the starter and make him better?
How quickly did you feel that Kevin O'Connell, Sean McVay, if ever, were going to be future head coaches?
Well, that's a good question. Well, being a head coach from a staff, number one, your staff, you have to have a pretty successful team yourself, you know, so you have to do well on one side of the ball. We were pretty good on offense, so it got them some interviews. And then once you get the interviews, do they have the personalities? Do they have the ability to win over an owner and GM in an interview? And the answer is easily yes. So getting their foot in the door is the most important thing. So you have to have success on your staff first, and then once they get the foot in the door and they get in front of people, will they perform? And easily, yes, for both those two guys. They're both very bright, obviously. They know football. They have great personalities. They can motivate people. So that comes off once they get in front of people, but you have to get in front of people first.
I mean, but did you know as they were coaching for you, did you know they were going to eventually get the opportunity and impress somebody?
Well, yeah, like I said, you have to have the success. I mean, there's a lot of good coaches like that out there that haven't had the success or the opportunities to get interviewed because they just haven't been on good teams. But, yes, for sure, you can tell that they have something more than other assistant coaches on your staff, if that makes sense.
And Sean,
there are some assistants on your staff that you know that'll never be a head coach, but there are some, hey, if this guy gets an opportunity to get interviewed, hell yeah, he's going to be a head coach easy.
Were there guys that you coached with or who coached for you who you were convinced would have and should have gotten that opportunity that didn't?
Yeah, like I had Raheem Morris. I knew Raheem Morris, and he was a head coach for a while. But other than that, the personality of these guys, I think the guys that are head coaches probably pretty much deserve them, and then the ones that aren't right now probably shouldn't have got one. I don't know. That's hard to explain. I don't know.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, Sean had the success of – you know, the offense in 2016, Kevin went to LA and they won a Super Bowl, you know, in that first year. So they both, as you described, were coming off seasons in which there was this feeling that they had really, you know, had productive offenses.
Yep.
So.
That's, you know, and the kid at Detroit's going to have the same opportunity.
Right.
Ben Johnson, he's going to have the same opportunity. Teams that have good offenses, those are the ones that will get the interviews. And if they can perform in front of the GM and the owner, then they'll get the jobs.
Yeah. Another thing before we get to this team real quickly. What goes into putting a game plan together? Just give me the timeline. From the moment your game on Sunday ends and you've got another game the following Sunday, what's the timeline in putting an offensive game plan together?
Oh, yikes. So Sunday or Monday morning, you have to grade your own game that you just played, and you got to get all the injury reports and have your meetings and all that stuff and watch the film and make your corrections. And that takes a little bit of time, and you get started on the next opponent probably around 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon on Monday, and you just start watching base for a second down. Then you start your run meetings on Tuesday afternoon with the line coach and hear the runs that we want to put in. And then you get those in Tuesday, probably around 3 o'clock, and then that's when you get the play actions and the bootlegs and all that stuff for second down play passes in Tuesday night. That's probably get those in Tuesday night around 10 or 11 o'clock at night. And Wednesday morning, you start finalizing those and make sure those are all good, and you start working on third down. Wednesday afternoon, third down, you have practice, all that stuff. Then you do the red zone and short yardage and third down. I already said third down. Then you do red zone, short yardage, goal line. So you do start to work on your situational type things Thursday morning.
And Thursday morning. So it's all coming from a large playbook that you have, right? You're not creating new plays. These are all plays from a master playbook. Is that how it works?
Plays that you worked on since training camp and OTAs, yes. And then you also get your ideas from other teams that have played and had success against, you know, like we're playing the Carolina Panthers. We're watching the last 4 or 5 games that they played, and you might come up with a play or a scheme or something that somebody else did to them that gave them problems. You might do it similar, maybe change a formation or something like that. But you will add some new plays, probably half a dozen or so, depending on the defenses that you're playing.
How big is the playbook, the master playbook, the one that you take to training camp?
It's never ending. It's big. You know, I started to short it down a little bit. I just wanted the core concepts in of our plays, the running game and the passing game. You got your inside zone, your outside zone, your gap plays, your pull plays, your perimeter run plays, and then you do your quick game, your drop back, your 4 verticals, you know, whatever it might be. You try to just narrow them down. And then you do them by specific areas of the field, red zone, 20-yard line, 15, 10, 5, maybe third down and 5, maybe band beaters, whatever it is. But it's pretty big. Now that I think about it, yeah, it's pretty big.
Do you know what the number of plays is that are in there, that, like your last playbook?
I'd say at least 40 runs, at least 40 runs, and then at least 120 passes at least.
So like 160 plays. Like Al Saunders famously had a 700-page playbook when he was here for Gibbs in 2006, 2007. That sounds like
it as long. You can make. I can make a 700-play playbook right now. I could make one play about 20 plays. You could take four verticals, for instance, and I could draw it up 35 different ways with motions, formations, and all that stuff. So yeah, you could easily make a 700-play playbook.
Do you still do that? Do you still doodle around and create a play that comes to your mind?
Yeah. I like it's good. I'm with the 33rd team, and I do some stuff, so I have film access. So I love going on and watching all these games and seeing who's having success and what's Mike McDaniel doing. I know he has great players, but they're having success on offense and trying to see if there's any new schemes out there that you have to be aware of, stay current, just in case.
What is new? I mean, you watch Miami. You've seen a lot of this motion.
I think Miami's they started the new flat motion. You know, a lot of people were doing the motions across the field, but they're starting to do just give Tyreek Hill a running start on some of these.
Right.
Kind of like arena football, but he's got to be lateral. That's the only really thing that's crazy new. Other than that, everything is pretty much the same. More RPOs. Bills are running more RPOs now. But everybody's been running RPOs. There's different ways of running them now.
I want to ask you about RPOs in a moment, but that motion, that getting, it seems like everybody's copying Miami. You see, and you're talking about where you've got a receiver on the right side of the field and he's going to go in motion to the right rather than coming across the line of scrimmage. I've seen a lot of copying of that. On RPO, I've noticed, and it could be that there's just more running off of RPO, but the true RPO where the quarterback is going to make the decision to either throw it or give it to the runner. We're not talking about read option where the quarterback can keep it as a runner. The one where you are at risk with linemen being downfield because they're blocking run. It seems to me that I've seen less of this year, and I would attribute it to they called a lot of ineligible linemen downfield last year.
You're right. Yeah, they're doing it again this year, too.
Yeah.
I can remember when really Chip Kelly was started it that I can remember. And I can remember when we were playing Philadelphia, I'd stand by the referees and wait for those damn linemen to be downfield, and I'd be pointing linemen downfield, and I actually got a call because, the quarterback pulls it out, they're reading the linebacker. If the linebacker flows with the run, then they pull it out and they throw the slant and try to replace where the linebacker should be in the pass. So that's where it started. But they're calling it more, so you're seeing less of it. But there's still a lot of teams that are running quicker versions of it with maybe a tight end and a flat or a bubble screen. Something like that.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about Washington because it's a weekly conversation about Sam Howell, and the NFL changes dramatically week to week, but the last 2 weeks have been pretty good for him and pretty good for the offense. So what is your this week version of Sam Howell's future as a starting quarterback here in Washington?
I think it looks bright, right? I mean, he's thrown for, 600 yards plus the last two games against two pretty good opponents. And he's done it a lot of different ways. It's not a lucky 600 yards where he's throwing a screen and the guy's running for 80 yards. This is a legitimate pushing the ball down the field, reading defenses, out of the pocket, in the pocket, off schedule, on schedule, with anticipation type of 600 yards. Very quality. So, yes, I think the future's bright for Sam. I think he's going to continue to get better and better the more he sees and the more he plays. So, yes, I think he's a guy that you can build your team around. Plus, he's got a young contract. So, yes, you have some money to spend.
722 yards, in fact, the last 2 weeks. 70%, just over 70%, five touchdowns. And he went from being sacked on average six times a game to just two times a game the last 2 weeks. How much of that production, how much of the limitation now of sacks the last 2 weeks, how much of that credit do you give to Eric Bieniemy?
A lot. He's changed. Early in games, he's given him some completion plays, easy things to get him started, some release screens, some quick screens, some bubble screens, flat routes, whatever it might be, to get the ball out of his hands, helps the lineman, helps the quarterback get into groove. And then as the game goes on, then they start to air it out a little bit and challenge him and they've done a better job with the protection schemes that I've noticed as well. They didn't really have a good plan for the Giants. Let's just call it what it was. They were not prepared for the Giants' fronts and blitzes. But now they're prepared the last couple of weeks. They haven't got challenged as many blitzes. I thought New England would blitz them a lot more, but they didn't. Much better job protecting. That goes to the coordinator. And then getting the quarterback in groove, get him some confidence, get the ball out, let him set his feet and throw it. That goes to the coordinator as well.
What did the first game without Montez Sweat and Chase Young look like to you?
You know, it didn't look like a lot of different. It didn't look that much different to me. Did it to you?
Well, I mean, everybody's saying, you know, no pressures, no sacks, but to me it looked like New England was in quick game most of the day, and Mac Jones gets it out pretty
quickly.
Oh,
they were, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, New England was getting the ball out of their hands quick, and they always have, and Mac's not going to hold the ball a lot. You know, they got the one sack that they called the personal foul on, which is one of the worst calls in NFL history. But I didn't really, you know, I thought they'd keep one of the pass rushers, but I didn't really think that those two guys were, like, dominating the game when they were here. So it wasn't that much different to me.
Yeah. All right, so what is the challenge Sunday in Seattle? The last time Washington was in Seattle, I think, was that 2017 game where you guys went in with about four new linemen and had no chance before the game started and somehow pulled off a miracle win. It's a tough place to play. Talk about that first.
Yeah, it is a tough place to play, and that's something you have to handle. Snap count, silent counts. You have to get your tight ends and make sure they're aware of what's going on and whether you're holding hands or how you're handling the snap count, that's number one. Because in critical situations, it's going to be very, very loud, and Seattle's going to be ready to go. That's the most important thing. And then you just got to handle situational football and play your normal game. That's just, it's no different going on the road. The biggest difference is the snap count.
Tell me about this snap count. The silent snap count, I think all of us recognize a silent snap count when we see it. You know, sometimes it's the guard that, you know, taps the center or whatever. But walk us through how a silent count works.
Yeah, so we would have the guard look back at the quarterback, and whatever the quarterback's signal was, whether it's a hand clap or a lift the leg up, that's when the quarterback's ready for the guard to tap the center. And then you have to do your dummy snap count. So you have to have a fake one. Okay, I'm going to lift my leg up, and the guard's going to tap the center and fake like they were going and then try to get them off sides. So you have two or three different versions of the silent count, which is very simple. But the big thing is for tight ends and receivers and tackles, sometimes they're far away and they can't see the ball move as easily. So they have to kind of work in unison with the tackles and the guards. And it's hard for the outside guys. And it's just a big advantage for home teams. I think that's why the biggest advantage in pro sports is home games for football teams.
Do tackles moving outside, do they go by watching the ball? That's what they're going on. It's a silent count, so they're watching the ball. No?
Sometimes they hold hands with the guard, and the guard triggers them to move based on his movement. Because, you know, as a tackle, you're trying to get as deep as you can for the pass rush, and you can't be looking inside at the ball, so you kind of have to go by feel more so than watching the ball.
All right. You mentioned the crowd. You mentioned the challenge with Seattle, but specifically, how do they attack Seattle offensively, and then what's the concern defensively?
Well, Seattle's has had trouble stopping the run all year long. That's why they went out and got Leonard Williams, which will help. But still, they had trouble last week against Baltimore. Baltimore ran for like 250 on them, but Baltimore's a pretty special team right now.
Yep.
So you have to be able to run the ball, keep their offense off the field. And then, obviously, defensively, I know they played much better in a secondary last week, but this is going to be a whole new challenge with DK Metcalf and, obviously, the rest of the receivers there in Jigba. So we'll see how they do there. But you have to be able to run the ball against these guys on the road.
Yeah, but you're not expecting Eric Bieniemy to all of a sudden become a run-first team, are you?
No, I don't think so, no. Which, you know, Seattle really, they have their strength of their team, in my opinion, is their secondary. So
right.
You just got to be careful. You got a really good nickel at Witherspoon. The rookie's a really good nickel. Their corners are playing pretty good. Their back end is their strength. So they just haven't had a whole lot of pressure. They went out and signed Frank Clark and obviously Leonard Williams, so that'll help them. So maybe, yeah, go after him. What the hell?
What do you remember about that Seattle game? That week, that season, that part of the season.
Yeah, that was rough. We had some guards playing that I didn't know, even know their names. They had to put a name tag on their helmet. You know, these guys stepped up and played good. That was, I think, one of Kirk's best games, actually, because he got hit a lot. I remember him throwing a double move to Brian Quick, and then fade to Josh Doxson, and then we handed off to Robert Keller for Kelly for the touchdown and a win. That was a hell of a win, but that was Kirk's, I think, one of his best performances. Obviously, not statistically, but physical toughness-wise, that was one of his best performances.
That season was frustrating for me because I felt like had you remained healthy, you had added some pieces defensively and you weren't nearly as bad on defense as you were in 15 and 16. And, you know, and that game actually got you, you know, back into it. And you had a game the next week or a couple of weeks later at New Orleans. We've talked about this game before that, you know, you're up 15, you had a chance to basically win it and you end up losing that game and you lost Chris Thompson in that game and then it kind of went south after that. But I thought that that season was a chance, you know, off of back-to-back seasons in which you, you know, the last time, you know, you coached the only back-to-back winning seasons for this franchise in like a 25-year period in 15 and 16. And I thought 17 had a chance to be maybe your best team had it stayed healthy.
Yes, I agree 100%. Fortunately, we did not stay healthy. We got beat up. It just came in droves, too, and they're all different injuries. It was really weird. You start to look at how we practice it and why are we getting injured. Is it the data centers over there? Is it something coming in the air? It's frustrating. So,
yeah,
we just lost so many linemen that year. We had, I think, 30 different line combinations that year.
Yeah. Yeah, and that New Orleans game was devastating because that was, you know, basically I think you had a chance to go above 500, and Chris Thompson was important to that team. I thought that year
Chris was huge. Chris was huge. His role was critical for our football team. You know, his third down role, known passing situation roles. He's our best pass protector on third down, picking up the blitzes. And we get him matched up on the linebackers, and his win rate was like 90%. I mean, so yeah, he was a critical piece to our success.
You know, speaking of that team in the running back position, you know who's had a decent career after leaving here is Samaje Perine.
Yeah, he has. Good old Samaje. He's a great kid. He's in Denver now. He's still doing pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah, he had a couple of decent games, I think, here for you. All right, who do you like?
How about Craig Reynolds? I found Craig Reynolds on. YouTube.
Yeah, Craig Reynolds. He was
Division III guys or Division II guys, and I just YouTubed like the top, you know, 10 or 15 players and watched their highlight film, and we ended up signing Craig because of that.
did Craig play in any I don't remember him. I remember him playing well in the preseason.
He dressed a game, and then when I got let go, Callahan cut him because, I don't know, he knew that Craig was my guy, so I think he was trying to send me a message.
Is that how it worked? By the way, I just can't – that guy, I know that he's an excellent offensive line coach, but, you know, he really took some shots at you after you got fired and he took over. You know that, right? They were not super direct, but they were directly subtle, I should say. So I'm assuming the relationship wasn't super tight with old Callahan, old Coach Cal.
No, not really. Really, the only coach I really didn't hire, I was Bruce Allen hired Bill. But
right.
Anyway, that's neither here nor there.
Yeah. I'll tell you one thing. He gave answers in press conferences that were like dissertations. I mean, they were 5 minutes long. Not as much sense of humor came with his answers as they did with yours. All right, so who do you like Sunday? Washington, Seattle.
You know what? I think it's going to be a good game, but I think Seattle takes it. I just think they're going to get Kenneth Walker going a little bit more and give Geno a chance. I really hated their game plan against Baltimore, but I think they're going to do better at home. And I just think right now at this time, they're going to have time to throw for Geno, and Seattle's better. But it's going to be close.
So you like Washington plus the number, 6.5?
No, I'm going to take Seattle still.
You're going to lay the 6.5. All right. Let's talk about a couple of
24-17. How's that? 24-17.
There you go.
Final.
There you go. So if you take Washington, you buy the half point to 7, you push on that one.
There you go.
There are a couple of other really good games this week, and it starts at 1 o'clock with San Francisco coming off their bye week. Jacksonville as well. One team playing great in Jacksonville, the 49ers having lost 3 in a row after they looked like easily the best team in the league. So tell me what you think about this matchup.
You know what? I think Jacksonville's coming off a bye, too, which helps out a lot. They're getting healthy, and they are healthy. They don't have any injuries of note to their football team, but at least San Francisco's coming off their bye, and they're getting Debo back, and I think Trent's coming back. So they'll be at full strength, and I think losing 3 games in a row, having a bye week, I think will help San Francisco. I think they come in and take care of Jacksonville.
What about Cleveland's defense against Baltimore this week? Cleveland, the first time they played the Ravens, they had Dorian Thompson-Robinson at quarterback. They got Deshaun back. You know, they held the Cardinals last week. I understand they were playing this guy Clayton Tune, a rookie. They held them in total to 58 yards of offense. I mean, it was domination. The Cleveland defense is one of the best we've seen in recent years, although there's some really good defenses this year. The Jet defense is great. But do you give Cleveland any chance against the Ravens Sunday?
When you play great defense, you always have a chance. You create turnovers. You give your offense great field position. So, yes, they have a chance for sure, and Deshaun needs to continue to play well. He had some good throws last week, a couple bombs to Amari Cooper, which helped them win that game. But I just think Baltimore is too good. I think they can. Baltimore is a weird team because they are. You think of them as like, oh my gosh, they're so fast and athletic. But really, they can punish you on both sides of the ball up front. They got a hell of a tight end and Ricard. He comes in and he mauls people. And they got big guards. They got great center and Lindenbaum. He's unbelievable. Yep. They can maul you with Gus Edwards, and they have Justice Hill, and they just added this other Mitchell guy. They can all hit you with the runs, and then. And then Mark Andrews in the passing game is a dominant force. So I just think Baltimore is a better team.
In the late window, Lions at Chargers, I think kind of a big game for the Chargers in particular, if they're gonna get back to the postseason this year. Do you give them a chance? They're actually a 3-point dog at home, although it's really not home. SoFi, you don't get home field in the odds from the odds makers, because it's actually a road game for the Chargers most weeks when they are at home, even for the Rams to a certain degree. How do you size up that one?
Yes, I like Detroit a lot. I think that San Diego or the Chargers, sorry, they don't really have an identity right now. They can't run the ball. I mean, Austin Eckler is a hell of a back. They got to get him outside on the perimeter somehow, and in the passing game, he'll be involved. And Keenan Allen, those two guys are really the only two they have on offense. Justin's a good player, but losing Palmer, losing Williams hurts them a lot. They don't have anybody else. Their tight ends aren't getting a lot. Everett and Parham aren't playing that well. So it's a two-man show over there, and I think Detroit will stop them and continue their ability to run the football against the Chargers this week. Last week, I think they had 200 yards plus rushing against the Raiders for the Lions. So I'm thinking the Lions are going to come out with that mentality again and open up some play passes for Jared Goff, and they whoop the Chargers' butt.
Two more. What do the Jets do with this great defense, with some playmakers, and with clearly horrible quarterbacking?
Yeah, that's they got to figure it out. They got to, you know, they don't have any choices. You can't just go out and find a quarterback right now. You know, the Rams signed Carson Wentz. Maybe they should have tried to upgrade the quarterback at some time in the offseason, knowing you had a 40-year-old quarterback. And I don't know. You just have to coach him up and get him some plays that he knows and likes and can run, and punt when you have to punt. Just don't turn the ball over and hopefully to win games 17-14 or whatever.
Is Colt McCoy done?
No, he's still getting paid by the Cardinals. And for him to go back and play, he's got 4 youngins. I think it'd have to be a pretty attractive offer. So he's not done, but he can be done if he wants to be done, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it just seems like I was thinking about, you know, why Sean didn't sign Colt McCoy instead of Carson Wentz. Although I did read Carson was working with your brother, right?
Yeah, he goes down there. A lot of quarterbacks go down there. John's got an office in Tampa, and they go watch film and whatever and have some fun and talk ball.
All right. Give me your lock of the week.
Lock of the week is Detroit.
Detroit laying three
I watched the Chargers play against the Jets, and I know it's the Jets. The Jets are really good defense, but right now the Chargers really – I mean, they had a punt return for touchdown. They had an interception to set them up at the two-yard line. That's how they got two of their touchdowns. I just don't see them moving the ball consistently against Detroit.
Not to mention that Detroit is coming off a bye, and the Chargers are on a short week because they played the Monday night game. Scheduling doesn't always work out fairly. That may be a big reason.
And there's that.
Yeah, why the Lions are 3-point favorites. All right, thanks for doing this as always. Have a good weekend. I'll talk to you next week.
All right, Kevin, see you.
Up next, my smell test for the weekend, if you want it, right after these words from a few of our sponsors.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This segment of the show brought to you by Window Nation. If you've got older windows, 10 years of age or older, you should be thinking about new windows. You may have already thought about it. Now's the time to act. We're approaching winter. A winter, if you haven't seen, that is being forecasted to be much snowier than normal. Yeah, the Capital Weather Gang had their winter weather forecast out yesterday. They're calling for much above normal snowfall. Doug Kammer, Channel 4, he was on with me the other day on radio. He's calling for a much above snowy winter. So if you've got old windows, you're going to lose big money by paying much higher heating bill costs than you should be. You can reduce your energy costs both in the winter and summer by up to 30% with new windows. And right now, Window Nation wants to help out as we approach winter. Right now, for this month only, 0% financing for 5 years. 0% on whatever you purchase if you decide to finance your purchase for 5 years. Plus, two windows free with every two you buy. So you're only paying half price on the windows to begin with. Now is the time to protect your family from the elements, lower your energy costs, and upgrade the look and feel of your home. Window Nation's the company to work with. You call them right now at 866-90-NATION or go to windownation.com. Mention my name. You'll get a free estimate, so you've got nothing to lose. They will take good care of you. Their average installer, 16 years of experience with over 20,000 windows installed. It's one of the reasons that 96% of their installs at Window Nation require no follow-up service. I have trusted them into my home. You can trust them into yours. I've been endorsing Window Nation for 14 years. It always works out for everybody that uses them. Call them now at 866-90-NATION or go to windownation.com. So before we get to the smell test, Maryland is not in the smell test. Man, they've got a big game tomorrow against Nebraska. Why is it an important game for Maryland? Well, it's not just an important game for them. It's an important game for Nebraska as well in Matt Rhule's first year. But this is really the best opportunity for both teams to get a sixth win and become bowl eligible. For the Terps, it would be a third straight bowl season, even though this one feels disappointing right now. More on that in a moment. But any college football coach will tell you that these bowl games, no matter how insignificant they are to a lot of people that follow the sport, especially now that we have a playoff and next year a much bigger playoff, more likely than not, they provide an extra month of practice. College football coaches treat these bowl games as another month of practice, almost like the first spring practice. And it's very important, they'll tell you, to the development of next year's team. So for Maryland, look, they started 5-0. They didn't beat anybody during that 5-0 start. Mike Locksley did say before the year he expected his team to be now in a position to compete for a Big Ten championship. He did not predict a Big Ten championship. Some of you have reached out to me recently and said, stop defending Locks. He predicted a Big Ten championship. No, he didn't. He said that the standard now at Maryland should be competing for Big Ten championships. He felt like the program was in that position. And, you know, through 5.5 games, it looked like it. They were 5-0, and they were up on Ohio State 17-10 in the third quarter in Columbus. But since then, it's gone downhill. As a double-digit favorite against Illinois at home, they lost. As a double-digit favorite on the road against Northwestern, they lost. And those are two really hurtful losses. Now, Mike's done a great job. He's recruited well. He's coached well. There are moments, certainly during some of these games, where I'm as frustrated as some of you. You know, the penalties have been a problem for sure during his run here in College Park. But look at what it was before he got here. This program was a mess. And he is coaching in the toughest, other than the SEC West, the second toughest anyway, division in college football, which will change next year. But, you know, competing in the Big Ten East has been, you know, very difficult. Two bowl wins in a row, and it looked like a season that could produce 8 or 9 wins that won't now. But he needs this one tomorrow at Nebraska. Not for his job. He's safe. I mean, Locks has done, I think, considering where this program was, an outstanding job. But they need to go to another bowl game. They need to have that extra time. They need to be, you know, in one of those holiday spotlight bowl games where everybody's betting and maybe win a third in a row. Not, you know, overly significant to a national picture. I understand that. But they have Michigan next week and at Rutgers to close the season. They'll be an underdog, big underdog next week, and they'll probably be an underdog at Rutgers. Rutgers is 6-3. They played well. Hell, they were in the same kind of position Maryland was against Ohio State. They were up at halftime. They had a chance to go up 9 early in the third quarter, and they threw a pick 6, and it was all downhill from there. Kind of almost a similar game to the one that Maryland played. Tomorrow's big for the Terps. Hope they can go to Lincoln and get a win. All right, let's get to the smell test.
Kevin looks where the John Q. Public is putting their cash and does the opposite. It's time for the smell test.
The smell test, as always, presented by MyBookie. Go to MyBookie.com or MyBookie.ag. Use my promo code KevinDC and they'll hook you up with a cash bonus on your initial deposit. MyBookie, by the way, has the lowest total they've ever had on a game. I know that because it's the lowest total ever on a game. Iowa and Rutgers tomorrow, 28 is the over-under number at MyBookie. Now, if you've been following Iowa, you know they have very low totals in their games. But 28 is an all-time low in college football history, or at least since they started to track this kind of thing. Pretty amazing that a college football game has a total of 28. But if you've been watching Iowa recently, all of their games go under, pretty much. The last 3 weeks, the totals have been 34, 30.5, and 32. And every single game has not only gone under the total, it's been way under the total. Last week, 32 against Northwestern, 10-7 final. The week before that, it was 30.5 against Minnesota, 12-10 the final. And the week before that, it was 34 against Wisconsin, and the final score was 15-6. It has been an under fiesta this year in Iowa games. 7-2 the under is so far. with Iowa Hawkeye games. And this week against Rutgers, 28 is the total. That is not included in the smell test this week. What is? Well, let's get to it. First of all, last week I mentioned that a lot of you don't like when I give out more college games than pro games. Well, I was 0 for 2 in the pros and 4-7-1 in college. 4-7-1. So this week, though, more NFL games than college games. But let's start in college. How the hell is Virginia Tech favored at Boston College? I had Virginia Tech last week. They got crunched by Louisville 34-3. They are favored by 1.5 at Boston College, a team that's won 5 games in a row. Plus, Boston College, closest against Florida State of anybody this year. They lost by 2 to Florida State. I'll take the Hokies, minus the 1.5. Liberty's laying 13.5 at home against ODU. Liberty's undefeated. The public loves Liberty. I'll buy the half point and take ODU. Plus the 14. ODU's Old Dominion, for those of you that don't know. Oak State coming off that Bedlam win, the last Bedlam game with Oklahoma last week, is laying 2.5 against UCF. That's perceived to be way too short. An Oklahoma State team that's really played well recently, not just last week and their win against Oklahoma, but Gundy's got that team playing very well and still in the hunt for a Big 12 championship. I'll take UCF by the half point and take them plus 3. Houston, I've been kind of good with Houston for some reason. I had them against West Virginia. They won outright on a Hail Mary. Then I had K-State against Houston, and K-State won big. And then last week I had Houston plus a short number against Baylor, and they won outright 25-24 in overtime. This week they are a public choice against Cincinnati. Catching 2.5, Cincinnati catching 2.5. I'll take the Bearcats. They've had a tough season and their first season without Fickell. I'll take Cincy by the half point plus 3. And then San Jose State is laying 1.5 against 8-1 Fresno. 4-5 San Jose State laying 1.5 against Fresno. No big injuries in that game to quarterbacks anyway. I'll take San Jose State, lay the 1.5. Let's go to Sunday. I like the early game in Frankfurt. I like the Patriots plus 1.5. The Patriots, you know, they're a team right now that nobody believes in, and they're only getting 1.5 against a Colt team that, you know, has had some moments. So I'll take the Patriots plus 1.5 early Sunday morning. I'll take the Packers plus 3 at Pittsburgh. The public likes the Steelers against a Green Bay team that has struggled to score but is pretty good defensively. The Texans on Sunday are getting 6.5 at Cincinnati. The Bengals on a roll right now, less than a touchdown, sort of begging you to take Cincinnati. Cincinnati right now, the number one bet public team of the weekend. I'll take the Texans and C.J. Stroud plus the 7 buying the half point. I like Washington. The public's on Seattle. I said this on radio early this morning. I would play this game sooner rather than later. I think there's going to be some sharp money on Washington. I think that line's going to come down. It's 6.5 right now. By the half point, I am taking Washington plus the 7. But you better do that now if you want to go with this pick or if you like Washington as well, because it would not surprise me to see this line at 6 or less by game time. How the Jets are favored against anybody after what we saw from Zach Wilson on Monday Night Football, I have no idea, but they're favored by a point against Vegas. I'll take the Jets laying a point. And then I like Denver in Monday Night Football plus 7 at Buffalo. Buffalo is another heavily bet public team this week. So there you go. That's the smell test. Virginia Tech minus 1.5 at BC. ODU plus 14 against Liberty. UCF plus 3 against Oak State. Cincinnati plus 3 against Houston. San Jose State minus 1.5 against Fresno. Then the Patriots plus 1.5, the Packers plus 3, the Texans plus 7, Washington plus 7, and the Jets minus 1 on Sunday, and the Broncos plus 7 on Monday Night Football. All right, back on Monday. Enjoy the football weekend. Again, I like Washington in an upset at Seattle, 30-24 in overtime.
Second down. Freeney coming again. Cousins gets rid of it, has a man. Quick down.
Cousins back again, firing deep for Dotson. Diving! He's got it! Ryan Anderson comes in at fullback. Kelly the back. Rob Kelly going forward. Rob Kelly, touchdown! Washington leads. Wilson. One man rush, but here comes Kerrigan. He gets away. He sets. He throws a Hail Mary to the end zone. It is incomplete. And the Redskins win it. What a game in Seattle.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers. The trusted choice recommended by leading experts with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.